Good times. Welcome to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM's Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Hey, Adam, you ready to take a walk on the political wild side?
Oh, I always am.
Yes.
I always do.
Do-do-do-do-do.
A little punchy today.
Yes, I think
because,
so.
Yeah.
It's raining and, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little humid in here. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today, it's finally here, the leadership convention for the Conservative Party of Canada, and the final decision of which of the 13 remaining candidates will be taking over and taking the party into 2019. But who will it be? And then we will welcome back Phil Ault to the show. We'll talk to the Ward 3 councillor about the zaniness at Monday night's meeting, the current mood at City Hall, and a successful year of breezy breakfasts.
Mm.
But first... President Donald Trump, a group of words that don't really sound right together, kind of like Chief Financial Officer Scotty Hertz.
CEO. Oh, that's a good one.
Well, President Donald Trump, he went abroad this week for his first trip as President of the United States. By and large, Scotty, it seems like he didn't completely embarrass himself or the Republic, which is, given the past 120-some-odd days, is rather refreshing.
Yeah, I think he's somehow being kept in line. I don't know how, because he's so unleashed all of the time. Is it true that... Was he tweeting at all, or did he just sort of hold back on the explosions at 3 in the morning?
Great question. Why not?
I guess he's probably taking...
I do follow him on
Donald
Twitter.
Trump? I do, too, but for some, nothing was coming up in the feed, so I assume that...
I think
when you follow a kabillion people like we do, sometimes it gets buried, right? Like...
He actually tweeted about an hour ago. Thank you for your support. Together we can make America safe and great again. Although the make America safe and great again is in all caps. Hashtag
yeah.
POTUS abroad. Hashtag USA.
So it must be him then. It's not somebody doing the tweeting for him.
Well, some of these, there are, I think, multiple people who do work on this. I think there are the people who like tweet the rational stuff, and then there are people who tweet the irrational. And then Trump himself tweets the irrational stuff.
If there's more than one doing the irrational stuff, is a problem, but wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
So today in Brussels with the NATO, heads of NATO, leaders of NATO
right.
countries.
Yep.
And I just saw just before airtime there, he's complaining about, once again, the country's not contributing their fair share, considering it's voluntary.
Considering the deadline, and I just found this out today, but every time I see this story, nobody points out the fact that the deadline for ratcheting up your military spending to 2% of GDP is 2024. So this hasn't even gone into effect yet.
They're not contributing enough?
Right, but he talks about, I think it's like 22 out of the 29 countries aren't meeting that standard, the 2% standard. But again, it doesn't go into effect till 2024. So it's 7 years away.
He probably won't be president anymore, so it won't matter. But
well, if assuming he gets a second term, that will be like his last year in office. So then he can rant and rave about anyone who's not meeting that target then.
He'll have forgotten by then, though. Like, it'll be on to the next thing, whatever the next thing is.
But yeah, exactly. The point is that it's this straw man he keeps bringing up. I think it's also his only talking point because in regards to NATO, because he got a talking to from the Secretary General of NATO and now realizes it's not irrelevant and it's not obsolete. So he at least knows that much about NATO. But there was the footage of that speech. You know, it pans over to like everybody else in NATO who are standing there kind of watching him make that speech. And then
there's some eye rolling going on?
Not a lot of happy faces, especially Angela Merkel, who
never has a happy face anyway. But
well, she did when Barack Obama was in Germany.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah.
somebody said to me, you know, Barack Obama was with Angela Merkel. I thought, like, at the NATO summit? Because that would be kind of uncomfortable if, like, Angela Merkel, here's my plus one for the NATO conference, Barack Obama.
My good friend, Barack Obama.
So
he sold us down the river. How can you sit with him?
Yeah, exactly. But he was in Germany before she departed for NATO. The thing, I noticed that the speech, but I also noticed for the photo op, Trump pushed the prime minister.
Yeah.
Of Montenegro, the Prime Minister of Montenegro, whose name I wrote down, and like, like all my notes disappears into the ether. Oh, Dusko Mavakovic. He's the Prime Minister or President of Montenegro. But Trump, you see it on Twitter. Trump bursted in, like kind of like shoving him out of the way so he can get to the front of the picture.
A manhandle and adjusted the jacket. I saw a gif of it.
It's before. Ghastly.
It was ghastly. It was pretty funny, but not surprising. Yeah, that's kind of stuff we come to expect. But yeah, it is surprising that he hasn't done the usual, let's say, unhinged stuff that he does at home. Maybe he's too tired or too busy or whatever.
He seems to be tired. Because there was that in Saudi Arabia, the first day of the trip, he sent Ivanka in his place to appear in an event he was supposed to appear in because he was quote unquote exhausted.
He's 70. He's 71.
But this is the man who was insulting everybody else's energy and stamina. Remember Jeb Bush energy?
Yep.
Hillary Clinton doesn't have the stamina. And it appears like he does not himself have the stamina to handle these long over seas.
Yeah, that's a heck
ventures.
Of a flight. Yeah. But if you're on Air Force One, like, it's a pretty sweet ride. You know, like, you could...
Well...
Not that I've been on it, by the way.
Compared to United, I guess.
Yeah. I think when your knees are up around your ears, yeah. It's pretty sweet. You know, there is a bed on it.
Yeah.
Probably a shower. Golden... not golden shower. I was going to say golden toilet like Saddam Hussein, not golden shower. I didn't say that. Don't quote me on that. I don't need a misquote on that one.
Oh, my goodness.
Gold everything, like the elevator that Trump has in Trump Tower. So.
Right, but not everything. Like, Air Force One is, that's like the Trump jet. That's, like, super tacky with gold everywhere. Like, Air Force One, he probably thinks Air Force One is, like, a step down.
Trump Force One. Something like that.
But there is, like, serious stuff going on, because there is the Manchester bombing in England on Monday at the Ariana Grande concert. There and apparently sharing the intelligence, the New York Times was given crime scene photos, very detailed crime scene photos. The identity of the bomber was leaked. I can't remember the originating network, but it ended up all over television. I haven't been able to suss out where exactly the leaks came from, but it seems that it came from somebody within the U.S. administration. Because now we have a controversy where somebody's told the British press they're not sharing intelligence on this anymore with the United States. So the inference is that it was somebody on the American side of this that leaked to the New York Times.
Which is odd considering the way the administration treats the media these days. This must be a separate channel from the Trump channel, let's say. This will be somebody on the inside, obviously, sharing that info. And the New York Times, in defense, was that, well, you know, it wasn't pictures of bodies and whatnot.
Yeah.
It was more so procedural pictures, I think, you know, with the little ruler beside it. It is crime scene photos, essentially.
Yeah.
Which get printed all of the time. But I guess considering the gravity of this, if they didn't want them printed... You know, it's hard to say because the UK government were like, well, we're offended at this. I guess they share info with, it's five countries, right? If I got it right, it's UK,
five
US,
yeah.
Australia,
New Zealand,
Canada.
And
Canada. So, yeah, that has caused some tension between the... what did Trump say? It's the most... I think he says about everybody that it's the most important relationship. My relationship with Britain is the most important relationship, and they don't want do anything to jeopardize it. And it'll also give Trump the opportunity to beat on
the leakers.
Fake news and the media that he hates so much. He really hates
the leakers.
Hates the New York Times, hates hates anything that,
until he needs something from him. But yeah,
yeah. Here's the dossier. Yeah,
but I mean, something like this where a relationship is kind of compromised. They're beating up on the leakers, which is what the story they want. And we're not going to talk about the domestic stuff, but when we're talking about the Russian investigation, it's the leakers that the GOP and people who are speaking on behalf of Trump tend to beat up on. That it's the leaking of information that's doing damage, not the actual basis for that information itself. But it's hard to make that argument that it's the leakers at fault when, you know, the sort of the primary leaker is sitting in the Oval Office.
And the commander-in-chief is like...
Because there was that...
Fast and loose on the tweeting. Yeah.
There was that incident a couple of weeks ago in the Oval Office with the Russian ambassador and the foreign minister. He's talking about this tip that he's gotten from Israel. And of course, he's in Israel this week. And somebody asked Netanyahu about it. Netanyahu's like, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. Like, the relationship is good. And then Trump goes like, I didn't tell anyone it was Israel that gave me this information. I didn't share that. And you can practically hear his staffers like slap their foreheads in frustration, because that's not the story they want right now. It's more tacit admissions that he was telling the Russians things he probably ought not tell them, and adding the caveat, I didn't tell them where I got it from.
And yeah, there are still weird communication things happening. Did you see his signature of the Holocaust Museum book? It was like, so amazing.
Goodness.
Like, I'm so glad to be here with all of my friends. Like, that, you know, you do that like after the baseball game, not at the Holocaust Museum.
I think people were comparing it to like yearbook, like signing your book. You wrote everything, but see you
call
next
me.
Summer.
Call me this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody took the time to make the comparison of what Barack Obama wrote and what Trump wrote.
Right.
And Barack Obama had a short essay, I guess, covering all the bases.
Like everything Barack Obama's ever submitted.
Professor Obama wrote a little essay, and Trump's like, so amazing. It's just weird. And there was a bit of talk, too, and as to whether some of the things Trump's been coming out with is actually fatigue, or does he have some other problems? And the sentence that caught my ear on the news that ended up in this other report was... they'd asked him about the, collusion with the Russians. I think it may have even been in Israel in a press conference. And he said, there's no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign, but I can always speak for myself and the Russians zero. And I heard that and I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
In terms of parsing the phrase.
The language doesn't make any sense.
No.
Like if he submitted that like in a language arts workbook, that there would be red all over that. But I think what he meant was like, well, it's not me. I don't have any collusion with the Russians, which basically presupposes then that he might know that somebody in his campaign does, and this is like him.
Which is all going to come out now that the special prosecutor has been named, right?
Yes.
And was it Robert Mueller?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And there was a poll that said 63% of Americans think that this is a good thing, that this is happening. You would think it'd be higher, but that's in the pipe probably for when he gets home. Is there a timeline on that? Do you know? Is that when that is?
What, for
they
the
usually get
prosecutor?
Rolling pretty quickly on that kind of stuff in the States, don't they? They don't wait like we do. There's a royal commission and it's going to be at Christmas. It's like the Americans will be. It'll start right away.
Well, they didn't get, like, it was almost, I think Clinton was almost in office by the time they got the Iran-Contra report back. Like, these things can take years, which is like, I think people are sort of seeing this through the lens of, like, law and order time, where the crime and the perpetrator going to jail is, like, condensed to an hour, and it's not going to be like that. Mueller's going to be at this. For years, I think, even with people in administration helping him along.
And is he okay with Mueller? Is he not a nut job? Like, whatever he's calling people. I guess there's not much you can do about it.
But of course, Mueller served in two different administrations. He was appointed by George W. Bush, did his 10-year term, and Barack Obama was like, can you hang around a couple more years? And
why, sure.
And he did.
You want the seasoned person on this. You don't want just anybody, right?
Right. So he's got mad credentials. He's mad credentialed. And it's going to be very difficult to keep up the presumption that this is a partisan witch hunt or this is sore losership, as Trump has been phrasing it. Mm-hmm. And the 63%, yeah, it could be higher. But I would also point out that I think the last time they did polling about Trump's taxes, it was something like 75-80% of people said he should release his taxes. So it's, I mean, this is a, I mean, these things kind of grow. And one of the things that people have been reminding us in the reporting is that a lot of people on the GOP side back during Watergate were saying a lot of the same things, like this is fake news.
It's echoes of Watergate.
Yeah.
And people getting fired.
Yeah, sour grapes.
What was it called? The Saturday Night Massacre or something? Yeah. Where Nixon thought he was very quietly getting rid of
everybody. That was 73, so 5 years into the Nixon presidency that is when that happened.
As opposed to 5 minutes in this one. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other, just one more disturbing thing was apparently Trump bragging to... Rodrigo Durante, the president of the Philippines, bragging about... how there were two nuclear subs off the coast of Korea and how this is another major security breach because, of course, you have state actors like Russia and China sort of scanning the oceans and sonar and radar.
You say
and
the
things.
Subs are where? Exactly.
But, yeah.
Duarte, you want to talk about unhinged as well. He's another special case.
Good point. But, I mean, the point is that Russia and China are always scanning the waters, trying to find like the echoes, like, oh, could that be a sub? Could that be a sub? So when you know where subs are, you can then extrapolate where all the subs are, which is a huge national security F-up, which is why three different people in the Pentagon leaked it. Anyway, I just wanted to...
Red October style. Yeah.
A little bit. Except Tom Clancy couldn't make this up. Anyway, the conservative leadership convention is this weekend.
The vote is this weekend.
The vote is, yeah. There's also an event in Toronto, a two-day event. There is a lot of advanced polling. A lot of it is being done by mail-in ballot, and it is being done by ranked balloting.
I guess it's the reveal of the vote is this weekend, because most of the votes are in, right? Somewhere there's a warehouse with a bunch of votes for this.
Most of the votes are in. I think they have till like 5 o'clock tomorrow to get them all to Deloitte and Vaughan. And I've heard like some leadership candidates are having like their staff or volunteers like kind of drive in last minute ballots and that kind of thing. Plus, there's going to be voting on site as well. So if you're a conservative in the greater Toronto area and you want to nip in and cast your vote, you can likely do that. So, I mean, but you're right. For the most part, the vote is in. It's just a matter of counting it all up and seeing what happens. But there's going to be speeches and stuff, and it will be interesting to see.
Did you get an invite to this one? Or I'm just curious.
No.
Is it
closed? I don't think so, but I didn't really apply.
It's just you're on that list now. You went to one of the debates.
Yeah.
I've noticed with these lists, once you're on them, that's it. You're just
interestingly, I have not gotten any follow-up emails for being on that list.
You're cut off. I mean, Donald's in your hand.
Maybe somebody somewhere recognizes him. I don't know. But, I think a lot of people are expecting it's Bernier's to lose. I'm not entirely convinced of that. I think it's still going to be a photo finish.
There are some interesting elements to this that doesn't make it necessarily a clean victory for Bernier. Mm-hmm. He seems to be the favorite in all of the projections, and that's taking into account number of donors, which is always massive. Something that is definitely going to affect this is the not only the ranked ballot system may change it up a bit, but also this is interesting, and I didn't know this until this past week, is that each writing is not ranked, but weighted.
Weighted, yeah.
So the way it was presented was you can have, a teeny tiny writing that has 12 conservatives in it. And let's just say Bernier wins. Mm-hmm. So Bernier gets 100 points for that writing. Mm-hmm. Whereas other larger writings, say you have a writing with 10,000 conservatives and you get 1,000 votes, it's still only worth 10 points in that case.
Right.
I'm not sure how they're going to... Is it a combination of the ranked ballot and points, or can the points supersede? I'm not sure whether the points are a check on the electoral system, or is it...
I would imagine it would be.
So it's if there's any question, if Bernie is like 50 points something, it's like, but he's got 10,000 points or 100,000
points. Well, I mean, I think that's how you avoid, like, someone who's, like, the 10th out of 13th suddenly rising to the top of the pile. Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, that person may have been everyone's 10th choice or everyone's 9th or 8th choice, but the points kind of, you know, so weigh it out.
Yeah, because it's 338 ridings, yeah. 100 points each, potentially 338,000 points. So I wonder if there's going to be somebody that could have, you know, 50.1%, and yet, you know, you don't have enough points, so we're just going to... I'm not actually sure that's going to factor in. I'm sure we'll find out on the weekend. But they're doing it a very interesting method. It isn't just, you know, one of those old delegate conventions that we used, well, like the NDP had that, mm-hmm. that got rid of Mulcair, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they also have mail-in ballots and that. It's not just that stagnant, you know, the signs are moving over and they're throwing their support behind. That doesn't even matter now, the way they've done this, right? It doesn't...
No,
it's a non-starter. I mean, somebody could throw... Oberai could throw his support behind Bernier.
I mean, it's mostly a rally with the leadership.
It's lots of rah-rah. It's Canadian values.
But it'll also be a good background for the person who does win. The iPolitics poll, and they polled party members. So, I mean, the people who will actually be voting. Bernier has 28.4%. But this is the interesting part. Andrew Scheer has 19.5. But I don't see anyone on social media talking about Andrew Scheer.
No, but I wouldn't say he's the dark horse, but he's the other one that suggested, in terms of the battle, it's Bernier for, we'll call them the libertarian wing.
Yeah.
And then Scheer for the, we'll call them the social conservatives. So that, which includes Trost and that gang, Kelly Leach to some degree.
Yeah.
It sounds like those are the favorites for the split in the party, because the split isn't red Tories and, you know, business types anymore. It's the libertarians versus the social conservatives. And of course, there's overlap there as well. So it sounds like Scheer is not the sleeper, but he's been touted on two or three of the polls I've seen as being the second place. Like, he is the other guy. So he could be, you know, a bunch of people's second choice, which would help him. He'll be quite a few people's first choice. In terms of fundraising, do you know, was he up there? Because that seems to be the factor, is it whoever
I
has...
I did not get a chance
Bernier
to look at the
has the most
numbers.
Money, so they reckon Bernier will be the guy, and he'll have the most points, and it's going to be a bit of a coronation. It might not be, though, and that's what we're going to have to watch. Now, of course... The turning point, as people know, for Bernier was when O'Leary dropped out of the race, which wasn't a complete surprise, not to me anyway, and came out in favor of Bernier. But his second choice was Deepak Oberai. So it's like, what? You know, that's great. Oberai, I believe, is in the base. If he isn't in the basement, he's at the very bottom. But he is kind of the people's favorite. I think we talked about this before.
Yeah, a lot of people like him as a muckraker, as kind of like a, you know, like an honest kind of, you know, guy. So...
With atrocious French, and that's, you know,
but he's straight up about that. I mean,
that's true. No,
up.
But you cannot be the leader of any party. I think we talked about this before too. Any party in Canada, you cannot be the leader if you're not bilingual. It's just not possible anymore. I think the last one was probably Preston Manning or maybe Stockwell Day. Beyond that, it's like it just ain't happening. You can't do it. But if you want to be prime minister, you cannot not be bilingual. But so I think that's adding to Bernier's favor as well in terms of somebody being...
Well, that's why O'Leary dropped out, because there was no pathway to victory. And
he was so half-assed. Like, I don't know.
He was always half-assed.
And he owes money, too, right? He owes something like $250,000. He's in debt.
Because he skipped debates.
But he's like a multimillionaire. Like, can't he just do a Nigel Wright and write a check and say, there you go, my debt is forgiven?
Well, that's the weird thing. But it was also weird because of... the fact that a lot of people are giving him money. And then when he dropped out, there was like a Press Progress article about it that a lot of people are like, give me back my money. I donated money to you to run for conservative leader. And it seemed like you were never really in it. And then you drop out like a month before.
Sounds like when he sold the software business. Same
thing. Yeah. I mean, the comparisons are startling. But then iPolitics apparently reported that he wasn't likely going to be there, but then he appears on Twitter and it's like, wrong again, fake news, I will be there for both days. But
of course not me there. I can just hear him. Yeah.
But he was never really in it. And, which is something that I feel genuinely surprised. But of course, he had like a ceiling too. He never went really above 24%. He was not really growing his support either, which is I think also why he dropped out
and phoned it in. Yeah.
And he started phoning it in. Like he was in it for about 2 months with like muckraking and making comments, appearing in the media, and then you know he sort of reached that plateau and then didn't seem to want to take part anymore.
So just throw my support behind.
We should also mention Aaron O'Toole, who in that iPolitics poll was third place with 15.2%.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So he's kind of like, I mean, you kind of have the three camps here. You have the libertarian, you have the social conservatives, and you have the red Tories. And I think O'Toole's pretty indicative of the red Tory camp.
Yeah, and Lisa Raid and...
Well, that's where
Chong, I would say, belong in that camp as well.
I mean, this is where I think the rubber's going to meet the road. And when we're talking about the ranked balloting, is you know, you can almost see where everyone's going to go. Trost support, which like sits at almost 4%, he's probably going to go into the sheer category. You know, Lisa Raitt, Michael Chong, if one of them don't sort of make the cut, they're probably going to go under O'Toole if he's standing tough. Somebody like Lemieux, friend of the show, Rick Peterson, may go to the Bernier camp. So it will be interesting to sort of see who starts falling off. I think Alexander's done.
Yeah, probably.
Lemieux's done. Saxon's done.
I think nobody who's actually a seated MP will probably not even be on the radar.
Isn't O'Toole? Doesn't O'Toole have O'Toole and Bernier?
Oh, he does. No. But you, Alexander and Peterson.
Blaney's done.
It's not like we're doing the draft picks. Blaney, done. Peterson, done.
And Kelly Leach, who just seems to have like fallen off the... I mean, she's still in it, obviously, but she was kind of the one making news for a while there. She was like kind of going full Trump immediately after the U.S. election. But over the last couple of months, I can't think of a single story about her.
But she lost Kouvakis, right? And I think that probably was it because he...
Yes,
right?
That's
I think
right.
That might have been the turning point where it was like it all changed because maybe whoever her new person was didn't play it like Kouvakis did.
Yes, I mean that's now that you're mentioned that I can certainly see that because he speaking of muckraking, he's the guy.
So I guess by about I was told about 7:30 p.m. on Saturday we should know who the new leader is, barring any glitches. And I think something that may happen is if this whole ranked ballot system and the point system overwhelms them somehow. I'm not saying it'll be like the NDP who got that virus the day of. There could be some factors that would affect the vote in that respect. And also, you know, if it gets glitchy. The other thing, too, that was mentioned is if there is a low, if there's all this excitement, yet there's a low turnout.
Yeah.
So even though they have... Over, was it like 250,000 plus members?
They think they've gone about half.
Yeah, then. Half of those.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 125, really.
Yeah.
And then, so if that's the case, then it'd probably be even less than that. I can't see it.
I do wonder
being more.
I do wonder about that number, though, because there were those campaigns of like to get moderates to sign up for Conservative Party memberships in order to block Leach and O'Leary.
It's people in town I know have joined that aren't really conservative. Right.
But so. Leach and O'Leary aren't factors anymore. So I wonder how many people's their hearts are still in being. You
Maybe
know,
we will see Michael Chong. You know, we won't see Michael Chong. I wish, in my own personal view, that somebody like Chong would take the reins. But instead, it's going to be.
Well, I think
beating of supply management and all those other things that Bernier loves
I would
so
love
much.
To see...
The maple syrup syndicate must be stopped. What? It won't win him any votes in Quebec. That kind of attitude. And the dairy farmers of Quebec are just going to go. I was reading about it in the Ontario Farmer. Actually, there's name checking a paper that people don't normally read. It's like they're not. You know, supply management is a big deal there.
I would have loved to have seen Lisa Raitt get it, I think, because I think she speaks very well, and it would be nice to see a lady leader. In the House, you know, because Rona Ambrose, who is going on to Washington think tank,
the business world,
I think she did a really good job, and it is to her credit, that she was able to steer the ship quite well following the election. And I'm kind of sorry to see her go. I mean, I didn't agree with her on everything. I thought she was like a really hysteric about marijuana when she was health minister, but she's done a good job leading the party, and I find her to be a very admirable, very principled person, and So good luck to her.
You can bet there's a Senate seat being warmed. That's my prediction.
Well, she'd have to apply. That's the way it goes now.
Good.
But it's not impossible.
Somebody strongly suggested it to her, but no, I think the corporate world will pad the...
Oh, no doubt. She'll be fine. You don't have to worry
She's
about...
She's going to land on her feet.
You don't have to
Another yacht cruise at Christmas.
You don't have to worry about, like, walking
near
around
the
Calgary
same island
and,
where Trudeau is.
And passing Rona Ambrose dressed like a bum on the street. She'll be fine. And we're going to be fine because we're going to take a break and be right back with some music and some PSAs, and then we will have Phil Ault in studio after that. You are listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I am just like all my friends. I've been on these old streets, going door to door with a worthless degree, a worthless degree. Boo hiss, boo hoo.
And that was Nicolette and the Nobodies from The Fantastic, and actually hit number one on the station, Guelph theme songs. And that song was called Boo Hiss, all about this town. And check it out on Bandcamp, guelphthemesongs.bandcamp.com.
Probably not the last song from that collection you'll hear on this show.
No, we're going to play all of them.
So we are pleased to welcome back to the show Ward 3 Councillor Phil Ault. We former colleague Phil Ault, friend of the show Phil Ault, and we're also pleased to welcome his Robin to his Batman, Holly Reed, who is a grade 10 student from College Heights. Your first time on campus, I believe, Holly?
Yeah.
Yeah? Liking it so far?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, speaking of interesting, I think we can all agree it was a pretty interesting time on Monday night there, Phil.
It was indeed an interesting, and some would dare say, I call it a challenging evening on Monday, or actually on Tuesday night.
Tuesday, that's right.
I forgot it was Victoria Day weekend.
Yes.
We dealt with a couple of important issues. One was the transfer of a surplus that Guelph has generated in the 2017 budget year, which has received scant press of $3 million into our reserves. And those reserves are used primarily to offset any extraordinary increases that we might have to pass on, and there was a certain amount of debate as to where they should go. The other issue was about how we conduct our business, and that related to something that is known as the Committee of the Whole.
Well, let's set this up for a minute, because in last September, Guelph used to have what's called a standing committee structure, which was four or five committees that conducted various aspects of city business. Last September, the city went to a Committee of the Whole structure, which is all of council participates, and the former standing committee structure was a couple of different councillors on various committees. But now the whole council participates in the Committee of the Whole, and resulting in, as some would argue, some longer meetings and perhaps a bit of lost focus because sort of all the issues are together in this one committee now, right, versus a public services committee, a corporate services committee, and so on. So there was a 6-month review, and there was some concern because there was a report about getting feedback from council that it wasn't quite working the same way that standing committee structure was. So we come to Monday night, and Leanne Piper proposes that one of the recommendations to continue with Committee of the Whole be separated out, and then all heck broke loose. The majority of council decided to, or the majority of council decided to not continue with Committee of the Whole. So, I hope everyone is able to follow that.
This guy knows his stuff, eh?
But I mean, Councillor Piper said that she did not know where the vote was going. But I am wondering, and I think a lot of people are wondering, were councillors aware? Was there any discussion behind the scenes? I'm not so sure about continuing on with this Committee of the Whole thing. What are we going to do? Because it did seem. I'm by no means suggesting collusion or conspiracy or anything, but it did seem everybody came to the right conclusion at the wrong time.
It was interesting. In fact, actually, we did, I feel, come to the right conclusion. And it was in unfortunate that it did occur at that time. But Committee of the Whole, the problem with Committee of the Whole is not Committee of the Whole per se. It is how Committee of the Whole is perceived both within council and, I believe, staff, and also within the community. Many people perceive Committee of the Whole as being exactly the same thing as council, and it is not.
Right.
It does not operate under the same rules or even laws. It is a recommendation. It is a board which recommends to council decisions that should be made. Has there been discussion in the past? I've been discussing this for as long as we've had Committee of the Whole, as has Councillor Hofflin, and dare I say, I presume, a number of other people. Very little discussion has gone on amongst anybody in general about what that particular vote was going to be. In fact, Councillor Hofflin has said to me, "Why did you vote for that?" And I said, I decided that I was going to vote for that because I'm tremendously unhappy with Committee of the Whole. And she said to Councillor Gordon, "Why did you vote for that?" And he said, "I always intended on voting for that." And there was some suggestions that there were hand gestures going around council that I think somebody was looking for Rock to pull a rabbit out of his hat or something. I'm not really certain. But there was no sleight of hand. There was no Sauron, bringing out the power of the rings. This was six people who felt that Committee of the Whole was, for all intents and purposes, wrong. Right. There was even an allegation that there was a conspiracy, that people knew that councillors were going to be away. Mm-hmm. I confess, I knew Councillor Downer was going to be away.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Councillor Downer was going to be away because 2 weeks ago she told me that she was going to be away.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't have any impact upon my vote. I believe that I have absolutely every right to vote for what I think is in the best interest of the city.
Oh, no, absolutely. It just, it was funny because I was, in my post for Politico, I was like saying, okay, it's going to be a short night. And then it wasn't. It does seem like, no, go on.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It did seem like it was going to be a short night. Where I thought that we would get really tied up was on the transfer of $3 million,
right,
because that's not chump change.
No.
I thought that we would debate that for a long time. We debated it for a reasonable amount of time. I did not expect that we would be going on and having to actually suspend our rules, which I will never, ever support, and I didn't in that particular instance because I believe it's a very dangerous precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Once the rules are suspended, I was quite prepared to vote my conscience again.
Yeah, fair enough. I think, and then maybe we can get your read on it. It did seem like the matter maybe brought out some enmity in amongst council, because there were certainly some not so indirect or direct sort of references to people following a political agenda. And I'm wondering, we're at almost about two and a half years. Into this term of council, and it seems like the right time for maybe the cracks to start showing that.
Well, I do think that we could be far more cohesive than we are. I think that we do need to have the leadership that is going to pull us together and to collaborate on more issues, whether it's Committee of the Whole, which is something that probably should have been hashed out in a workshop at some point, to look at what the pros and the cons were. And I'm sorry that staff was took unawares by this. There certainly was no conspiracy. But from my point of view, I also question where the contingency was. I don't think that staff or anybody else should presume that a vote is going to go one way or the other.
Right.
We must always have contingencies. I think we saw the same thing with online voting as well, that there were people that were concerned about that. There's no conspiracies, but there's clearly a schism. And and that schism does not reflect well on us as a council and our leadership.
I would agree. So, Holly, let's badger you for a sec, because you were there on Monday and you've been job shadowing Phil. You're interested in getting in municipal politics. Having seen all this, and I presume bearing witness to other things at City Hall, why are you looking to become involved in municipal politics? What about this is interesting to you?
Well, I've always wanted to help change the world. It's been my prerogative since I was five. And my whole life I've kind of been put into politics. I haven't been the whole thing, because there's stuff that I've been told or heard about that I'd never thought about or heard about before then, and I'm starting to get into that now. But I've always looked at the bigger picture, and when I went into my civics class, because I didn't think about doing this at all until I got into my civics class and got a, I think I got a 98 in the course and 100 on the exam, so I thought, I'm good at civics, so maybe I could try politics. And when I've been doing this and working with Ten Cardin, I found that I really enjoyed it, and I've been liking kind of the idea, and it's something I've actually always seen myself in, so...
I think when I was five, I wanted to pilot the Millennium Falcon. But you will go to College Heights, and I understand you have some ideas about going on at your school that I think you're looking at maybe proposing that we change the name of College Heights, because you think College Heights maybe, rightly or wrongly, has a bit of a reputation in town.
It has a wrong reputation. It's a great school, and I love going there. The teachers are so nice, and I've gone up in my grades since I went to elementary school. I'm getting super good grades now. Yeah, bad ones.
What's your name choice? Do you have one, or is it just you want to change the name to something?
They were thinking Polytech, but everyone voted against changing the school name because they thought it was their heritage and it's our school and we shouldn't just change the name. So that's kind of been thrown away.
So no one suggested renaming the school like Schooly McSchoolface or something like that.
One person did.
Yeah, just me. Me just now.
I was going to rename it Holly Reed High School.
There you go. You never know.
Maybe one of these days. Yeah. Maybe the 2067 at the Bicentennial.
Adam, can I just give a plug for College Heights?
Yes, you
because
may.
I think that it is maligned in its name and its reputation. And the programs that are offered at College Heights are extraordinary. Everything from auto shop and lead into apprenticeships to auto body to hairstyling. There are people that have graduated from College Heights that have become teachers in polytechnics and elsewhere. And there are people that have gone on to university from College Heights. And I think it's a real hidden gem. Just one thing that I'd like to promote to the whole of the public is, and this is going to affect me a little bit, if you want to get your car repaired, you can get your car repaired there, but you're going to have to line up. And if you want to buy great baked goods and great food, the food that is prepared and the baked goods that are prepared at College Heights in their food prep program is second to none.
The secret is out.
The secret is
out. Let's go.
I'll note that Holly did come here empty-handed, though.
She's a politician, not a baker.
Next time.
Why did you want to job shadow? I mean, how did this get arranged? How did you end up being under Phil's tutelage, and how did he end up with you?
I wrote my name. We got the sheet, and I said politics, and then the teachers did the rest.
The teachers.
That was easy. Politics.
I was expecting some great, like, you know, Capra-esque story about you, like, being outside City Hall, and it's like, Counselor, you're so great, I want to learn under the best, but all right.
Is this a first? It must be.
I have actually never met Holly before. I did have a student who was job shadowing me from university last year, she was fabulous. Same sort of intent, that she wanted to become more involved in civic government. My orientation was slightly different, because as I looked at the university students who were doing the job shadowing, or we were doing the mentoring with them, what I was looking at was, how can I best prepare them for jobs in civic government? Because the civil service is tremendously rewarding. It sometimes is a position where you feel that you're put on an awful lot. But what better service is there than doing that which you can for those within your community?
Absolutely. So, Holly, what is your plan? I imagine universities in your future, but in terms of jobs or where you know, maybe different levels of government you're interested in getting involved in?
I know I don't want to be prime minister.
Fair enough.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I was thinking going into, like, London politics or Toronto, because I find that'd be where I want to end up in my life.
Mm-hmm. So do you mean, like, you want to stick municipal, you aren't interested in provincial or federal, or so you want to help locally?
Well, that's
good.
Like that.
Any particular area?
No, I haven't thought that far
yet.
No,
not far enough.
There's still time, right? There's still time.
So what have you learned following Counselor Ault around? What has that taught you? How has your perception changed from when you filled out your form to where you sit now on CFRU?
I didn't know there was as much moving around and community work. I kind of thought you just kind of sat at a desk and didn't care. So that really showed me that. And I like working with Ten Carden because you got to see more of the community and people coming in and working together, and different aspects really changed my view.
Okay, great. I do want to talk about community engagement with you, Phil, because you and James have been doing the Breezy Breakfasts for over a year now. Mm-hmm. Did you imagine it would still be over a year later, you'd still be doing it? And two, that it would get the response that it did. It is like appointment sort of a meeting time for a lot of people. A lot of the same faces do come out week after week, assuming they don't have work conflicts or anything. But it is, I think it is has turned out to be everything I think you and James intended.
It's been overwhelmingly successful, and I would say that it has exceeded our expectations. We thought we would try it, and we thought we'll give it a couple months run, and maybe we'll do it once a month. But it has been successful enough that we've been able to have guest speakers in on a regular basis. Today we had guest speakers in on transit and waste management who were able to inform an audience of between 25 and 30 people about sorting your garbage properly, which I'm not joking about that. Everybody there is a reasonably informed individual, and everybody seems to know how to sort their garbage properly. We all learned a lot about what we're not doing properly. We discussed other issues as well, such as there are gaps in our garbage collection system. We don't provide the same sort of service to condominiums as we do to single-family dwellings. Mm-hmm. We learned that Mike Spicer, the new transit manager, is absolutely committed to ensuring that Guelph Transit is able to work effectively and efficiently throughout the system to deliver a system that Guelph is going to be proud of. And even prior to us doing any sorts of reviews of the effectiveness of the system, he is intending on launching something that I think is very important to University of Guelph students, a Gordon Street spine route, which will run every 10 minutes from down at Woodlawn, which is down by the Canadian Tire and another store I won't mention, all the way up to what I believe is called the Pergola Commons. Yep. That'll be every 10 minutes. That particular service should link virtually every bus in the city, so that the complaints that Adam, that I know that you and I have heard about people missing their transfers and so on, should slowly go by the wayside. I don't want to crow too loudly about this because there will be growing pains, but it's a start to a whole new vision for Guelph Transit.
And the realignment's coming before committee at the June meeting on the 5th.
That's quite correct. And actually, I do encourage anybody who is concerned about transit to please come to that meeting and to please offer us as much input as we can on what you think is working now, what you think we should get rid of, what we can improve, and what your hopes and expectations are for the new lines that are coming on board, really beginning September the 1st, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. You're an old, not to be offensive, you've been at the political game for a while. You've run federally, so I imagine, you do have experience on your side, but you've been mentoring Holly here. So what have you learned from her? How has mentoring her informed your being on council and what you do as a counselor?
Well, these young whippersnappers, they will tire you out.
Old man Ault's back in the studio.
I've discovered, and truly the most important thing for me, and it does come from Holly, is that idealism amongst youth is not dead. And the mythology that students and that teenagers do not care about their city is dead wrong. The issue for me as a politician and looking at succession, because I do believe in developing leadership within the community, is that the culture is there, and we need to cultivate the roots. I look at Holly and other individuals as the roots of a successful city in the future. We need to recognize that such things as a skateboard park, as downtown revitalization, making certain that we have the appropriate recreational facilities, recreational activities for youth, are things that are going to give kids hope that actually the community is listening to them and they can be part of a positive change in the future. I'm really happy to have people like Holly tag along and remind me of why I'm there.
Well, looking forward to the next couple of months. We talked about transit, the transit realignment coming, but in terms of just, you know, whatever you're working on, what are you looking at for the next couple of months? What are your priorities?
Well, I truly am looking forward to transit. I'm looking forward to our service reviews. I believe that the service reviews will confirm those things that we are doing right, those things that we need to improve, and maybe those things that we need to say are things of the past as well. I truly am looking forward to more community engagement. I love the community engagement. I have very few residents who ever call me up just to complain. They might be concerned about leaves, mm-hmm. parking, snow, garbage, all sorts of those issues that we think are very mundane. But I might not be able to give them the answer. But if I can give them the ear and try to find out the answer, they're generally happy. Very few people in Guelph complain about taxes. Mm. The people that do complain about taxes tend to complain loudly. People have no issue with taxation. They want to see wise taxation and solid use of community funding. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is delivering on that.
Holly, what are you doing this summer before grade 11? Anything interesting?
A lot of interesting stuff.
Go on.
I'm going to a camp called Frienda, which I'm excited because I went last year and I made a lot of friends. Then I'm going on a 2-week vacation with my family to PEI.
Oh,
and
wow.
In that area. So I'm excited for that, too.
And you're going to keep volunteering with 10 Carden, I take it?
I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I'm old enough yet. We haven't talked about it, but I'm going to keep talking about it.
Because that's a big project coming up. They're moving to a new building soon.
And maybe if she isn't, maybe what we should do is talk to 10 Carden Street about engaging youth. Because there are a lot of students out there in the summer who are looking for things to do and are looking to keep active and vital and... You know, in a musical city like Guelph, in a city that is so artistically creative and has such energy and youth and vitality, let's harvest our greatest resource, which truly is, without sounding, too flowery, is our youth.
Phil, when people want to get a hold of your ear, where can they find you?
They can get me at phil.allt@guelph.ca, or if you can remember the number, 519-827-6579. Or come on down to Breezy Breakfast at 8 a.m. every Thursday morning and have a coffee or have a breakfast with us.
I won't ask where people can find Holly. She's not quite there yet. But I appreciate you guys coming in. It was great to hear your perspective, Holly. And Phil, always glad to have you in studio. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks, both of you.
And that is it for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. You can listen to us or stay connected to us all week long at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. We are on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And you can listen to this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can subscribe through iTunes and or Stitcher. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and the Spanbook. Haven't written anything in a while, but you never know. You just never know.
You never know.
Don't hold your breath.
Keep that Spanner book blog bookmarked.
I will.
You can stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here on Thursday at 5 p.m. with more open sources. And until then, see you guys next week.